Hey guys, you're about to watch one of my most inspiring interviews about a fat guy with no money who was on unemployment who decided that he wanted to get into online marketing, or maybe online marketing decided that he was meant for it. Anyway, you're going to see the story of how he went from nothing to building this multi-million dollar company. I am editing this interview quickly because I want to get it up before hundreds of other people apparently are going to post articles about him. He's a good marketer, and apparently he's gotten other interviewers and other bloggers to write about it. So instead of running an ad, what I'm going to say instead is that my interviews are sponsored always by Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. He is a lawyer that I've known for years. I've used him recently when I needed an agreement written, and I highly recommend Walker Corporate Law. And this interview is also sponsored by Grasshopper. That's where you go when you want a virtual phone number that will actually follow you wherever you are, that when you hire people, you can add extensions. I know many of you know about Google Voice, but what happens when you start hiring people and that phone number that you have from Google Voice is on everyone's phone, and now they're calling you, and you want to find a way to get them to call your office so that the calls go to multiple people? Well, if you need that, you need grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started with the program.
Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And today I've got Jeremy Shoemaker, who's known online as Shoe Money. He is an entrepreneur, a writer, and a hustler. And as you'll see in this interview, he made his early money by working a really interesting angle at Best Buy. And he went on to build several companies, several what you might call legitimate companies, including NextPimp, which allowed people to pimp their mobile phones. He tells his story in an incredibly engaging book that I can't rave about enough. The book is called Nothing's Changed But My Change. And the reason that I rave about it is because he's a damn good storyteller, and he does what I wish more of my interviewees would do, which is open up about the stuff he should be embarrassed about. Half this book the guy should be hiding in shame from for admitting, but I love that part of the book. Jeremy, welcome.
Thanks, Andrew. I really appreciate you having me on again. It's a real honor.
You made your first million, was it from NextPimp?
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first huge hit. You know, it was a fun project. I was on unemployment and started getting six-figure checks from Google.
And the idea came to you from something that you were trying to do with your own phone. What was that?
Yeah, originally, I just wanted to put a picture of my girlfriend on my phone, on my Nextel phone. And this was, you know, early 2000 when that was a pretty interesting thing to do and a very hard thing to do. It had to be a certain format, certain exact size. So you had to pad it, whatever, whatever, without getting too geeky. So I figured out how to do it. I posted on a place called Howard Forums. At the time was the internet cell phone thing. And so I started getting all these emails, people sending me pictures. Can you do it for me? And I was like, sure, you know, and then it started to be like hundreds a day. So I was like, you know, I got to figure out a way to programmatically do this. And so I made a website for it where people could upload any photo and it would format it correctly for their phone. And then Ringtone shortly followed and did the same thing. I upload any audio file, convert it for your phone. And then it just occurred to me one day I should allow people to let them store them and share them with others. And I called it categorize. Now it's tagging and all this stuff. But this is way pre-YouTube, pre-all this stuff. So, yeah, that's how my first site started. The site just blew up, within about the second year of it running, I found myself on unemployment, and so the site was getting, you know, 100 to 200,000 unique visitors a day, depending on if it was on the front page of Dig or, you know, different various things. And, you know, Google calls me up and tells me to put this code on my page, and within a couple months, you know, I go to the bank, and I've got an unemployment check and a six-figure Google check.
First check was for how much?
The first check was for, I think, about $55,000. But there was issues in getting it because I had registered with the wrong address and then I had moved and stuff. So I actually got the $100,000 one before I got the other one. So that was actually my first check. And so, yeah, I got off unemployment, but I still had subsequent checks, obviously. But if you want to see an interesting look on a banker's or teller's face, as when you show up and you've got a history of non-sufficient funds and bounce checks and not sure if they should call the cops or bring out the president to meet you. So.
Do you remember opening up that check and how it felt to look at something that was for more than 10 bucks or more than unemployment, whatever the amount they were giving you?
It was so surreal. I mean, it was literally so surreal. And I absolutely couldn't believe it. I remember being in a chat room and showing people the stats as they were the first day that it crossed like $4,000 in a day. And I said, you know, I mean, I was having so much fun with it. It was like, it wasn't real money. And I would say in the chat room, I'm like, okay, whoever can guess the closest to today's earnings without going over, I'll give you 10%. And it was just stupid things like that. It was just fun. You know, I'm in my underwear in my basement, you know, having fun. And even when I got the check, I immediately had my mother-in-law take a picture of me with it. And that's the famous one that goes around. Luckily for me, Google doesn't send out checks after that month, ironically, for anything over $10,000. So I had her take a picture because I couldn't believe it. I thought any minute the door's going to get busted down and the Google police are going to say, hey, you didn't earn this. And there's a big problem. There's a big mistake. We need the money back. And I was like, you know, I want a picture of this so that I can write a book someday maybe about how to make money with Google and stuff like that. I mean, that was my plan. I had zero confidence that this was going to last because I didn't really have much success, you know, before that.
You didn't. In fact, were you still fat at the time when that first check came in?
I was still at that time.
You were. And you grew up fat. You say in the book that you weren't dating. Do you remember wanting to approach girls in high school and not even being able to talk to them? Or do you remember the reaction they gave you when you did talk?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was every girl's best friend, you know, and was just the friend, the cute guy, the friend guy. I like you as a friend, you know, all that stuff, you know, just constantly.
So how does that influence you to be that person?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge advantage, actually, growing up with that mentality and always having to be better, you know, at everything. Because people assume, you know, you're this lazy kid, you know, you're with all the stereotypes that go with people being fat. But then on the other end, you're so much more hardened for when people come at you in a negative way. Because there's, you know, people on the internet talk smack about everyone. But there's, you know, kids are pretty cruel when you're growing up. So I think it actually gives me a little advantage as well.
You actually told me before we started this interview, and I think it's okay for me to bring up, that friends who you mentioned in the book from back in those days when you were the heavy set loser, they saw their names in the book and they did what?
Yeah, there was a girl specifically who was really upset because I told the story about how I was just infatuated with her and I bought her a dog that she wanted thinking that, you know, she would see how much I loved her, and she traded the dog for a bag of pot. And how upsetting that was. Well, she didn't like that. And so she said, you know, she's threatening to sue me. And there's another girl that I talk about who's, you know, got several kids and on welfare. And I talk about how she's totally fine. And this was another girl that I totally adored, you know, and it's just like, how's that working out for you
now?
And
she's now on welfare, you said.
Oh, yeah. Her and her husband both have lived off the government. And actually, in the book, I say, you know, they should write a book someday if they're reading this called How You Paid for My Life. And just, you know, about how the American taxpayers have covered all their bills ever. You know, so.
Man, you've come a long way. You started out with these people. And yeah. One of the things, Jeremy, that I love that you open up about is what you did to some of these people. You say, this is a direct quote from the book, about the story I'm about to ask you about, you said that it was your first lesson in how to exploit people's passions for profit. Is that what you do, exploit people's passions for profit?
Absolutely. I know it sounds very aggressive, but at the same time, I mean, if you look at the most popular ways to make money on the internet, right, what do we really do? We get people to envision themselves losing weight. We get people to, you know, gym memberships. You've got teeth whitening. I mean, weight loss is the biggest industry, you know, money-wise. You've just got all these things. And really, those are just passions. I mean, religion, you know, is one of the richest businesses in the world. And it's just all these people's passions. And wherever there's passion to do that, I mean, Seth Godin wrote a book, you know, well, many books that kind of talk about it. He's not as direct as me, but he did say all marketers are liars. And, you know, he talks about that. You know, like it's people never buy a product for what it actually does. It's the story they tell themselves on what it's going to do for them. So when you can, an exploit is a strong word, but it's what it is. When you basically find different angles to let people see like what a product or service is going to do for them, then in my opinion, you're exploiting people's passions to make money.
What about this? That as marketers, It's very easy to measure success of your marketing. If you're a good copywriter, you know instantly that you're a good copywriter and how well it worked because you see the sales and you get to compare your sales for this copy with sales for previous and so on. There isn't as much passion, as much instant measurability for giving people results, for seeing if they could 5 years later have lost 100 pounds because of something they read for you, or 10 years later have built a successful business. So we neglect the product and focus on the marketing, don't we? I say we. I would like to be that good.
Yeah, I mean, it's depressing at times. I had a discussion about this with my wife the other night. And it was about, because it was not the exact question, but it's true. And I've created a lot of products. I've had a lot of services. And the one thing that really is depressing to me is my products had, if I would have been as successful as I would have wanted them to be, I would have had to sink to a level that I'm not comfortable with as a marketer. So it really disturbed me because I had such a better product, but it really didn't matter. And then at the end of the day, you see the consumption ratio of your products, right? If you look at the models of a gym membership, is a great example, right? If everyone actually used their gym membership, the gym would be out of business, right? They oversell it, like something like 3,000% is like a goal, or just something like that is a successful gym. So the one thing you can count on is that anytime something actually requires work, that 90% of the people that purchase the product aren't going to use it, you know, or whether it's my wife has, three different mixers under the shelf in our kitchen. Never uses, but she
then
was...
we're disincentivized as marketers, as business owners. I mean, going outside of the online marketing space, even to gym memberships, you gave an example of a company that has a disincentive to have you go and use their product. We're disincentivized as marketers, as entrepreneurs, when it comes to creating a better product, because focus on a better product means less focus and time away from the marketing. Focus on a better product means that more people are spending time with your current product and not waiting for your next product, which is going to save their lives.
Right. And I think that's the difference between a lot of fly-by-night marketers and a lot of people who have done very well. And so like in my thing, I believe in value and in really giving away value. And so through my blog, I've built a following. Through forums and helping people, I've built a following and trust and value. And so I even say, if you want to see this in action, you should get on my newsletter list. And obviously that sounds marketing, but you'll buy something from me. And the simple fact is that, and people will probably laugh when they see this, but I'm telling you, because I give you so much overwhelming value that by the time I put something out, you know it's going to be great and you actually feel like you owe me, right? So the market has changed and now it's really like the price of free, and everything is almost like a loss leader now to get you in. It's almost like the old days of if you look at Time Life books or some of the old models of Columbia House, like 9 cents for 9 CDs and you get your CDs and it's awesome and you sign up for another account and then your parents get these bills. What in the hell? So, but I got a little bit away, but basically like I'm able to sell product after product after product to people who have followed me because they know that they are a really good value. But the thing is that not many of them actually consume them, but they'll keep buying them. That's the cold, hard truth behind it. And if anyone tells you different, they're lying to you. Because if the magic people who make the magic bullet tell you that everyone who buys it uses it every day, they're totally lying to you. Anyway, my point is that, the sad part of it is even though you give people value, the product does exactly what you promise. The consumption rate is going to be extremely low, but people will continue to buy from you as long as you continue to give them value and open up their eyes to things they didn't think about.
What were your revenues in 2012?
2012 was a tough year for me because I actually had to completely refocus the company and actually decide to run a really, really legitimate company. So it was the first year ever that my company was very close, like revenue-wise. I think we did over $1 million in revenue, but our expenses were so much because I not only put a lot of revenue to our new company that we just launched called the PAR program, which helps a lot of big businesses out, but I wasn't trying to make any. So all of the streams of revenue had stopped or dwindled, and then I was pouring money into this new company, creating it, hiring people and all that. And so, 2012 wasn't the greatest thing, but I really had to look at what I was doing, stop the fly-by-night company stuff and mentality, and go back to like what I did with auction ads, which was a company I launched and sold 4 months later, but I shouldn't have sold that company. And so I had, and it was more kind of a confidence level, kind of a lack of education. I sold it for a pittance of what I should have gotten. Even the people that bought it told me if you would have held out, you could have got like three times more than. And I just was like bird in the hand, gone, you know, give me this. So it was, you know, and it's taken that evolution of the kid who barely graduated high school, no education in business, no education in this. And all of a sudden, you know, you create a multi-million-dollar business that's doing $2 million a month in revenue. And so as long as they want to buy it, you're just like, you know, what will you give me? You know, and
that's auction ads is the business that was doing multi-millions. I'm going to come back to that to see how you've evolved as an entrepreneur. But where you learned your business seems to be your approach to business seems to be in school. That reference that I made earlier about exploiting people's passions, that had to do with this business you had selling baseball cards.
Yeah.
Can you tell people how that worked?
Yeah. So I did a lot of things as a kid. And that's kind of where the title of the book comes from. Nothing's changed, but my change, because I still have the same mentality. Right. But as a kid, you don't have the resources that you have. I have now. Right. So, you know, as a kid, I saw there was a the Fleer. I actually have the Billy Ripken card right here, which if you can see it on the bottom of the bat, it says F face. It was like a very famous card. It's like the biggest error ever. But it was actually this I believe it's 89 Fleer set that had like the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie, like Gary Sheffield rookie. Had like all these amazing cards that were super high priced. So they came in these wax packs, right? And so what I did was, is you could actually take an iron and a wet rag and you could steam them and the wax would melt and you could open them, pull out the good cards, put in the shit cards, and you could take them to school and sell the packs, right? Then you would have like a couple little shills around who you would actually load up packs for. And they would be like, oh my God, I just got this card, you know, and this card. And so then you'd have people come up and, you know, and it is kind of the whole thing. I mean, people envision themselves being that person and doing this kind of stuff. And of course, that was really sketchy. But, you know, it was an angle I saw. And, you know, I did a lot. I was always a hustler as a young kid, always able to make money doing various things.
The insurance thing, what was that? How'd you make money there?
So, yeah, that actually was for a friend that I came up with. And I have to say, like, the part that makes so much sense was, so it was basically he had bought this car stereo for like $3,000 or something like that. And so I came up with this thing and I was like, you know, and I actually had my car broken into like 2 months before that. And so I said, you know, if we were to stash like and stage something, you know, like your car got broke into, and because he kind of had a broken family and he was living with his girlfriend at the time, whose parents were very well respected in the community. And I said, you know what I bet would work flawlessly would be to, you know, stage a break-in on your car, put all the shit in someone's garage. And can I cuss, by the way? Sorry.
Yeah.
Keep it out.
You got to be yourself.
All right. Yeah. So, and we'll break your, you know, your dash and everything. But then what we'll do is you'll get up in the middle of the night and hit your car alarm. And so what that'll do is, you know, then her parents, who are good, upstanding citizens, will find the car. The cops come. She'll tell the cops what they, you know. So you're leveraging their credibility, right? So it's not you that reported it. It's them that reported it, right? And I have to say that was pretty brilliant. I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, I'm a little partial, but I thought that was
pretty. Kind of like affiliate marketing. Probably right. Affiliate off opportunity out there. And sorry, what were you going to say? And it's whatever other people say about it, it's on them.
Right. And so now it's kind of the same thing. Like you apply that logic of, you know, it's just think about like even my stuff today. If I can get a testimonial from somebody else, it's so much more powerful than I say it myself. Right. I mean, it's pretty much exactly the same thing without the illegal side of it. Okay. So if I can get like Andrew to talk about my book, right? It's more powerful than if I stand up here and do an interview with myself, right? Because I'm leveraging your credibility.
Yeah. That's so, that That's one of the benefits, by the way, of doing interviews with people who are new. They are really complimentary because they're so grateful to you for even doing the interview. And then you end up getting this really big promotion. In this case, I only said it because I freaking love the book. I think it's well written. I like the asides. I like how you suddenly disappear from the story and go off to tell me another story. But I don't want to make this about the book. I don't want to make this a promotion of the book. I want to talk about how you got to where you were. And there's one other story that I talked about at the top of the interview that I'd like to talk about here now in more depth, which is the Best Buy story. You work at Best Buy doing what?
So I worked in the car audio department.
Yep.
And home audio too. We both kind of shared both things. And I'm sure what you're going to want to talk about is actually the kind of angle that I discovered and
with the speakers.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to know about how you sold the speakers. I want to know about the angle you had on the speakers.
I'm sitting there one day. I actually loved these speakers, but they were $400. And one day, Best Buy used to have a policy where anything was 5% over their cost, right? Some things in electronics, these things were marked up a lot, you know? So I'm going through the manual one day, and I stumble across these speakers, and I see they're like a fraction of... And the actual pricing is in the book, but I think it was something like a third of what they actually were selling for. So I noticed like, wow, this is an enormous market imbalance. And I wonder if I could purchase them at my employee costs and then, you know, have a friend return them, you know, if I could get full store credit of the 300 and, you know, what they sold for. So that's basically answered your question. I mean, you want me to...
So that's what you did. You got the speakers at the employee discount rate of $75. You went to a friend who bought the same speakers at $300+, and you said, "All right, you have the receipt, or you got this. Say you got it as a gift. Take my speakers that I paid $75 for. Return them. Get $300+ from Best Buy, and we can pocket the money." And you did this 10 times until you got caught.
Yeah, I did it a lot.
More than 10.
But it was actually like so we didn't get any cash out of it. It was just an exchange, right? So like I would like buy the speakers at my employee cost. I'd give them to you. I don't even have to tell you how much it was and just say, no receipt, no nothing. Take these back. Tell them I gave them to you as a gift. Not me. You got them as a gift and they'll give you store credit.
I see.
Oh, yeah. I did that a lot of times, many, many times at many different Best Buy stores. And it worked very, very well. I had the most pimped out basement ever.
So it wasn't even about the money. It was just about the satisfaction of having done it and the trophies, it seems to me, about from having done it.
It was, you know, and a big thing was I got to hook up all my friends, right? And, you know, I mean, you know, the essence of happiness, which some, to quote somebody, say, you know, the essence of happiness is really making all of the people you love around you happy, you know, is really like true happiness. And I think, I mean, without getting all... But that was like an opportunity where I did see an angle and I did hook up like all my friends because I was like, hey, get me this and you can have whatever's left over to get whatever you want. And so everyone was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And, you know, Best Buy didn't like it and I got arrested for it and whatnot, but was found.
Why reveal this? Why start out your autobiography by telling story after story of the scams, essentially, that you ran as a kid? Doesn't that take away your credibility the time that you're about to go after bigger businesses?
I don't think so. I mean, all the businesses that we work with, you know, now, I mean, we work with some really big name clients with our new company, and they know my story. I mean, I've gone out with them. We've gone out and, you know, they were kids once, too. They made dumb mistakes as well. And I, you know, I've always done very, very well by being brutally honest. And I think if you're going to write a biography, that's what the point is, you know, it's you. You have a unique story and everyone out there does. So, I mean, the same things, that's why the title, Nothing's Changed But My Changes, is really like I have the exact same mindset. And I think in order to understand how I got to where I am, you have to see the pieces of the puzzle that actually makes my mind tick.
But there's also a benefit to it. Like if you tell me about a scam that you pulled, we're in on it together. So now we've gotten this sense of Jeremy being the guy who knows things that other people don't know and Jeremy bring me into his world. So we're closer. There's some kind of psychology that you're playing, that you're working here. What is that? Help me understand it.
Yeah, so it really boils down. So let's take the criminal aspect out of it. Mm-hmm. And let's just look at what it is and what you can learn from it. So in the case of the Best Buy thing, simple case of a market imbalance, right? Just that's it. You buy one thing for X, you sell it for X. There's a huge gap there. Those things exist every day. I know people that are buying on eBay Canada and selling on eBay US. I mean, I know people buying at Slick Deals and selling it in their local Craigslist, whatever. There's a market imbalance everywhere. It's just seeing the angle of it.
Gotcha.
Okay, so that's a lesson there. If you look at the lesson, again, with the car stereo deal, that was simply seeing an angle of leveraging someone else's credibility, because you're a 16-year-old and you're going to be, they're going to be like, if I would have called that in and reported that as stolen, I would have been the number one suspect. But because these upstanding, you know, people did it, and that's just it. I mean, that's really like every one of the things I talk about, what you can really take away is a lot. I think it's some eye-opening, like, okay, let's not think about, I mean, you can take away what you want. I hope the person takes away from it that, wow, that was really smart. That angle applied in a legitimate way is what's made him so successful today.
You say at the beginning of your book that you're a great copywriter, and you really freaking are. And I want to know what that is. What can you teach us quickly about becoming a good copywriter? And I'm anticipating the response that you might have to me, which is, there is no simple way, you have to work at it. But I've got to tell you, in everything in life, there is a way. Like if someone were to ask me, Andrew, how can I become a better interviewer? I would tell them, think about what you really need to know from this person who you're about to interview. Be really selfish, and you're going to start asking questions that are useful for other people. If you start thinking about what the audience is going to want, you're always going to get it a little bit wrong. So for writing good copy, do you have a shortcut? Or not a shortcut. What's one thing that you can teach us that works that quickly?
Yeah, I can give you a massive shortcut from my experience over the years. And yep. And I have had to work at it and learn over the years. I think a big thing is that I have no major education in English or writing. If you read a lot of even my sales stuff, there's a lot of grammar mistakes, and it's not written perfect, and my sentences run on forever and whatnot. Okay, but here's the basic structure of it. There's three things that I talk about a lot, and it's basically the three P's that any time you ever write copy for anything, you have to do. Number one is the pain. You have to make people feel pain. What are they missing out on? Right now you're getting ripped off because of X, right? Then you have to show them the potential, right? So you talk about, you know, well, what if there was a product that did this, you know, and wouldn't that be awesome? And this, this, and this. And then you have to give them the proof, which is, well, Jimmy Bob bought it, and here's what he has to say. Again, leveraging their credibility. And you never say, you know, here's what it'll do for you. Here's what I'm telling you to do. You also want to, this is probably one of the biggest tips, and I don't know that I even put this in the book about the copywriting part, but basically, like, you definitely want to, people have no attention span anymore. So if you write a book, and I had issues formatting with my editor because she wanted to take out a lot of the bold and stuff, but basically, you need to be able to skim a thing, like scroll really slowly and tell everything that it's about, okay? And you do that by using bold and using like highlighted text and changing colors, because just like television where they switch camera angles every so many seconds and all this stuff, and you have to do that. How do you do that in text? Well, you do that just by using bold and breaking it up, using bullet points every time you can. You know, and you just constantly keep mixing it up. Those are the secrets.
I see, like camera angles. So pain, potential, proof. Mm-hmm. Look for different camera angles, or the equivalent of them in writing, which is bold, big letters, bullet points, etc. And then there's something else, which is storytelling. You are so good at storytelling. As I said, that's what I loved about this book. You also said that that's what helped you sell, going back even to when you worked at Sears. How do you tell it? Most people's stories, Jeremy, are so freaking boring that once they launch into them, after two sentences, you want to tune away. I always, when I want to tell stories, I feel like no one's going to pay attention. They're going to be bored by stories. They want facts. They want results. So how do I keep my stories as entertaining as yours?
You know, I think it's by following those three P's. You know, like when I sold washers and dryers, the biggest thing was selling what we refer to as the cheese, which is the extended warranty. I make 10 times more off of an extended warranty selling it than I do the actual washer and dryer. I also get a big kickback from the credit card stuff. But specifically, the warranty is like, you have to start selling from the story from the beginning. So you tell them this story about, you know, hey, you know, just going to tell you, you know, before you're even looking at a washer and dryer, you know, I just had this happen to me where I just, my whole thing completely flooded. And it was, you know, you just engage them in this whole thing, right? And it could be bullshit, you know, whatever. But this is like as a kid selling these things. And so they're automatically like envisioning this pain, right, that is happening to themselves. But you've got to be polarizing. You've got to be, reveal some things about you. If you're just a normal, like you have to give all the details, right? And as you know, in my book, I mean, it's pretty, there's not much left, right? So, I mean, that's I think the big difference. Now, how do you do that in selling a product? I'll give you an example last week that I sold $30,000 of this guy's product. What I did was, is I said, wow, this is an amazing way to sell a product. And I said, you know, the model forever has been to do this big product launch and all this stuff. Well, this guy has taken the model from, I don't know if you know Amy Street is and how they sell music, but basically every time somebody buys one, it increases by a penny. Well, this guy launched a tool, which is, he sold for $1,000, right? But he did the same model. So he charged $9, increased it by a penny every time it goes. So I just said to my people, like this is, and I forget about the fact that he sells this thing for $2,000 for a second. And it's the greatest product ever.
And what is he selling for $2,000? The tool that allows you to up your price by a penny every time someone buys?
No, that was his pricing.
That was his pricing mechanism.
The actual tool suite was like, it's a keyword rock star. So it's got like, it makes banners that look amazing in like no time at all.
Gotcha. Okay.
You upload, and it's got all these preset things. It does flash banners, you know, Facebook ads, and it's just like hit a button. You've got all this stuff. It's ready to go. Don't go to the keyword site, though. Go to my blog and buy from there. So anyway, I tell this magical story about, wow, this model is amazing, and I'm interested to see how he does, you know. But also, like, this is an amazing product, and you can go here to buy it. Well, I sold like a bazillion of those. Like literally, like my commissions were like five-figure commissions off of that. And nobody ever suspected a sale was trying to be made, right? Because I'm telling this story about like, and I'm giving value because people are like, that is a really interesting model. Well, then I followed that up 4 days later and I said, you know, wow, here's the results from that. And I said, you know, look, this thing is priced now at $20. He sold, you know, well over 1,000. He decided to freeze it there. He sold well over 1,000, probably closer to 2,000 of this product. But why did he do it? And I told this magical story about why he did it. Well, because the product is so amazing, he's building value with people and he knows that he can sell them. So I'm like instilling all these.
What's the pain that you started telling in when you were trying to get people's attention and sensitize them to their own pain? What's the pain that you told?
So the pain is, how much are you paying a graphic designer to make these, right? Okay. Look at how much this costs to outsource, right? How long does it take you to make these yourself? When you're talking about, like, you know, how much is your time worth, right? Versus a $9 product, right? That's going to do all this for you. And again, it's envisioning the end goal, not like what you're going to have to do. And you don't tell them about how much work it takes, ever. That's marketing 101. Nothing takes work. Everything is just, this is done for you, right? So people are going to think I'm the biggest dirtbag ever, but I'm just honest. So, yeah. And so, you know, I sold a ton of them and nobody ever once said, you're using an affiliate link, you know, you're doing this or you're doing this. So, nobody spotted a rat. And I made a ton of money from it.
And that was 30,000 from that one blog post.
Yeah. Well, blog post, and I mailed my newsletter list too, but yeah, I got more from the blog post.
How big's your list now? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no. The list probably is, I mean, of active people is, I mean, it's about 150,000 total, but I sold a lot. I would say probably now it's about 30,000, like very active people. I mean, people can have giant lists, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, just the whole thing was, you know, the whole pain and what if there was this tool that could do it for you? Well, there is, you know, here's what all these people are saying about it. And I actually made a video of myself using it, right? So there's massive proof. Like, let me just walk you through how awesome this thing is. And I have to tell you, it's an awesome thing. And so it's just like, bam, I click a button, everything's done for you. That's it. It's very simple.
I see. I've seen you do that before, actually. It's just screen flow. Show your screen, talk, and
this exact method. And I'm not even going to name my new company because I don't want people to think I'm plugging that. What I'm doing now is taking the mentality of how I copyright, you know, how we give value and connect with users. And my new company, my newest company, does that for big brands. And I'm talking like big brands that we do, like blue electronic cigarettes, you know, like we have some State Farm Insurance of Nebraska we're working with, you know, like there's all kinds of companies that are coming to us for this. We haven't even marketed yet because people know, like, you know, I'm pretty good at what we do and we've sold millions through email marketing and we know how to build a relationship and sell products without ever saying, go buy this. Right. And it's all through that, like giving people value, you know, talking, pointing out all the press you get, you know, talking about the pain of what, how much money you're losing right now by not having this product.
All right. We talked about the early things that you did to generate money and to get electronics for yourself and your friends. And then we talked about NextPimp. But in between those two, there was another business, which was reselling computer parts. Where did you get these computer parts? How did you get them?
So I was a lead security engineer for Wells Fargo at the time. Mm-hmm. And part of that job was when when Wells Fargo would purchase a chain of banks, the first thing they go in and they rip out all the infrastructure. Everything must go, right? So I would be the person a lot of times that would go and look at all this equipment being like, okay, all this stuff. I mean, I'm talking telephones, everything. So I'd have to call this company called Redemtech and they're still in business. And I got to know them very well. And I said, what do you guys do with these computers? I mean, these things can't be, I mean, sometimes they were like 6-month-old computers. And he said, well, we have to incinerate the hard drives and, you know, to Wells Fargo security standards and all this stuff. And then we sell them by the pound. And I was like, where do I buy them? And he's like, just on the website. So I went on there and I'd buy them and part them out and resell them on eBay, sometimes sell them whole and made a huge, huge, you know, profit off of that.
How much was huge at the time?
I mean, it was probably like, you know, I mean, hundreds of percentage of market. I mean, some things I would buy that were a couple $100 and they would sell for thousands. I mean, some things, you know, you'd make like 20-30% margin. But most of the time I was quadrupling at a minimum my money, you know, so that was very, very lucrative.
There's a great photo in the book. Nothing's changed but my change. There's a great photo in the book of you surrounded by computer boxes. You are fat. You've got this screwdriver. You are taking things apart. And it's kind of cool, too, because there's a sense of this guy who's making something, who's turning this garbage into gold.
Yeah. At that time, I was 400 and probably in between 420 and 450 pounds. When you're that fat, there's not very accuracy on scales. So when I actually had weight loss surgery, they actually were able to measure. But anyway, so yeah, I'm surrounded. That was my life every weekend. I mean, I was such a hustler that I would sit at Wells Fargo and I would order the computer so that the semi would be delivered by the time I could bust ass out of there and get to Omaha, Nebraska. So from Des Moines, Iowa to Omaha, Nebraska, 2.5-hour drive. And I would be there to get the computer, start ripping them apart, paid like local neighbors to help me rip them apart, part them out, get them all done, get on eBay, get them all on the front porch for FedEx to pick up the ones that had sold the week before. I mean, it was a hustle. I mean, it was a lot of work.
How weren't you embarrassed to be with your wife at the time? The woman who you ended up marrying.
Were
you embarrassed to be with her? I mean, like sexually embarrassed to be with her, but also just like to be a guy with her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 420 pounds doesn't give you a lot of confidence, right? And so, you know, I think my wife was so intimidating because as a girl, when I met her, in the book, it's really detailed about how I wrote a script, you know, that spammed every girl within a 40-mile radius on Yahoo Dating and actually met one that about raped me, which in a good way, if that's possible. So it was like that really gave me a lot more confidence, but I still was like, you know, here's this girl. She's beautiful. She's about to go to residency for anesthesia. You know, I mean, she's going to make big money. And here I am, you know, voted like least likely ever to do anything. And it was extremely intimidating, you know, professionally, sexually, every which way. You know, I mean, I think I talk about in the bed. Well, I know I talk about the first time we got in bed together and we're making out and she says, do you still have your pants on? And I was like, I do actually.
She looked down and she couldn't see.
Because
you were embarrassed.
It was kind of a combination of both. I was just so embarrassed because I was so overweight and so didn't have any confidence at all that I was just like, yeah, not sure how this is going to go, you know? And yeah, it was, it was a, I was a real Casanova.
Could you? This is going way too far. Could you wipe your own butt, or did you need some? Did you need one of those tools?
I could, but I had to stand up.
Really?
True story.
So you, most guys at that point would be with someone, with anyone who would take them, because they don't have the confidence to get the right
tools.
Girl.
They do make tools to wipe your, because they make tools to wipe your own. That's amazing.
Some people are big.
Yeah, and that was one of the, you know, when you lose that much weight, and I'm sorry to cut
do it.
You off. When you lose that much weight, like 240 pounds, the quality of life is so different. I mean, as some people think, like, oh, I bet you have no fucking clue. I mean, like, everything from just everything is such a different quality of life. I mean, just walking down the street, not having people look at you weird, just like getting food and not having people stare at you. Like, you know, but then also like realizing how to wipe your ass sitting down. Like, that's pretty freaking cool. You know, I mean, just like, I mean, that sounds stupid, but when you lose 240 pounds, there's a lot of different stuff. Being able to run. I mean, you know, I mean, I know you're a runner, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, I remember, like, everywhere I went, I sound like Forrest Gump, I was running because I thought it was the coolest thing.
You can actually feel how much lighter you are.
I could run like the wind. So, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
But no, that's all. So, but what I was going to ask is about that, that most guys in that situation would have such an inferiority complex, they would date anyone who would have them, a girl who's really not worthy of them, but who would take them. And then later on, when things go well, they trade up. You were with someone who, I saw the photo, she looks great. She's a doctor, a real doctor, didn't just get her degree online. She is a personable person. So how did you do that? How? Because confidence is a big part of success, a big part of life. And when the evidence around you says you shouldn't be confident and you are confident, I want to study that. How did you do that?
It was her. I mean, you know, I didn't really have very many people that believed in me. You know,
what did she see in you that you would believe in?
We talk about that, and I ask her that question even now, you know, and it's just like, you were just such a genuine and loving person. And I knew, like, more than anything, you know, like, you had that. And she's like, those are qualities that people, you know, like, you know, people meet, like, I almost use somebody who's close to me as an example. That would have been really bad. But basically, like, people meet somebody, right? And they're an absolute jerk. Okay. But they're hot, right? You know, they're very whatever. So they get married and then they get divorced and everyone's like, gosh, he was such a jerk. And it's like, he's the same guy you married. Everyone expects someone to change. People don't freaking change, right? Nothing's changed but my change, okay? So, but it's true. Like, you don't really change the inner workings of a person. And so when she met me, she was like, I was able to see through all that. And I knew that you were a really good person, a good-hearted person. And you would be a great person that I'd want to father my children. And at that time, I was just like, I mean, it wasn't like, it was
because you can paint the blue skies, because you can show her what you can do in the future, because you were a dreamer even back then who can show your dreams to her.
Yeah. I mean, she was enthralled by, like, we had such intelligent conversation, and she was just amazed at, like, the shit I would come up with and the inventions and ideas I had and, you know, just everything before I even did them. You know, and she was fascinated with a lot of the different stuff that we could do. So
that's a really good test, that if you put this stuff out there and the person tells you, the person you're interested in tells you that how ridiculous you are, you're probably not with the right person. But if they believe in it in a way that even overwhelms your own doubts, then mm-hmm. I think you're with someone who's really good for you in life. All right. So let's continue now with the narrative. And actually, we talked about why don't we talk just a little bit more about why am I blanking on the name? I'm actually looking at my notes. Was it called Auction Ads?
Yeah.
That was an idea that – how do you sum this up for people who don't know it? What's a simple way to explain it?
Yeah, so think of Google AdSense, the ads on websites, but showing items on eBay.
Right, if I put it up on my website showing items on eBay, it would reflect what was on my site so the ads would be relevant. And if someone clicked and bought it, I'd get a commission. And what you did that was different was you gave me the commission quickly, where if I worked directly with eBay, they'd say, sucka, you better wait 60 days because we want to make sure that you're legit. And you could do that. I'm telling your whole story for you. You could do that because you had a way of sniffing out who was BSing, because you knew how to BS, so you knew how to spot the BSers. You said earlier, and I wanted to get back to it, that you had the idea, but you didn't see how big it could get. What was missing from you that kept you from holding on to it, from thinking bigger?
So auction ads, I mean, by the fourth month, we were doing about $2 million a month in revenue, and we had 25,000 active people. It was myself and a $20 an hour programmer, and that was it in the entire company. And I was working out of my basement. Now, anyone in their right mind would have been like, okay, time to bring in a CEO, maybe time to raise capital or consult with someone, time to do all this stuff. And instead, you know, like it was a confidence thing. Again, you know, I was just like, oh, you know, where's my way out of this? Because my customer support was basically, if you can't figure it out, you're an idiot. You know, I would actually respond like that. You know, and so basically, I mean, that doesn't work for a successful company. But it was growing, and it was growing though, because I mean, like, I was only in like part four of my 10-part marketing plan. And when we launched auction ads, there was 8 other people doing exactly what we were doing. But they weren't willing, and this is a big part of my company motto and myself, is you have to be willing to do what others are not. And sometimes that's ethics, morals, legals, whatever, or just freaking putting it out there. I mean, like you said, I was paying people net zero when I didn't get paid for 60 days. So at the end, I was floating millions of dollars of my own money, hoping eBay's going to pay me and hoping I did do all the security things right. Also, you know, a thing I did, I saw an angle of like, what if we just gave, and this has been copied a million times since, and there's also something I did with the book that is going to be copied a million times too. But I basically said, you know, okay, our minimum payout's 10 bucks. What if we gave our publishers $5 if they signed up and put the code on their website right now? Because the hardest thing is to get people to change, right? The hardest thing is to get people to actually do it and put the code on their website. I knew they were going to make more than they were with AdSense, okay? But to get people to actually do it, so that's how we got so many active publishers, is because we did that. And see, the thing was, since our minimum payout was 10 bucks, if this person was a waste of time, then we never had to pay them. If they would make over 10 bucks, then our margins were there and we knew they were going to make up, you know, and sky was going to be the limit. So there's other things I did that other people wouldn't be willing to do too.
And at the time, you just mentioned you were working out of your basement. I remember reading you back then. I remember reading people talk about you back then. You were like the Richie Rich of the marketing world. Meanwhile, you were in a basement. So how do you project this? Were you just projecting the sense of success that you hadn't yet lived up to?
I think so. I think it was like almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess. Like I had always envisioned, like when I started making money and started seeing like, oh my God, there's all these people are doing this wrong, you know, and like there's so much potential in like what these people are doing. I think, you know, really, I did just kind of foresee like a lot of stuff. I've made some big mistakes in the last like 2 or 3 years. I think a lot of it was getting out of the basement, right? Like, cause I thought that's what you're supposed to do. You're not, you know, you can't have a legitimate business and make millions and millions of dollars from your basement in your underwear. My wife used to say, my husband makes millions in his underwear. Imagine if you put on pants, you know, but that's the kind of thing is like, you know, my father-in-law is an old school Wall Street tycoon. You know, I mean, I want to impress him and all these people around me, and I want to have a real business. So I did that. I hired a bunch of employees that didn't really do much except play, you know, StarCraft and shit all day because that was fun. And I had all these streams of revenue coming in. So I basically supported that for years and kept looking at different things. And so, you know, it's been a real experience and education for me to like actually learn how to run a business. And, you know, and that's one of the things why last year was a very difficult year and very difficult in actually like seeing financials and actually like not just never, I never cared about financials. I knew I was bringing in so much money that didn't matter. But last year when my overhead monthly approached, you know, $100,000 a month, it was like, wow, you know, like these streams of revenue I have had coming in for the last, you know, since like 2003 from properties I'd set up back then. Still work. I mean, they still come in, but they weren't, you know, I wasn't doing anything new and I was paying all these people. I had all this overhead. So it was really, really had to change my model last year.
At one point, how much of Facebook ads did you control at one point?
Oh my gosh. We were the biggest and largest advertiser on the self-serve Facebook platform. We were spending $90,000 to $120,000 a day.
Running affiliate deals?
Yeah.
And were you also representing other offers for them?
No, we were spending I mean, we were basically spending money, you know, to convert to their offers. And we were doing this mostly through Zeus at the time, who was, you know, VC funded. And so they had just, they were just, you know, we were doing wires all the time back and forth because we have to turn around when we were spending that much money. First of all, my credit card at the time had a $40,000 limit. So I was prepaying American Express every day, right?
So that you can buy ads on Facebook and use those ads to run affiliate deals for insurance, for Netflix, for whatever you could come up with.
Yeah. We mostly just completely annihilated the dating industry. I mean, nobody could compete with us.
Because you were buying so many.
Well, we were buying so much and we were running so hard and heavy that if someone wanted to compete with us, because, I mean, it takes a while to get it dialed in, right? So everyone thinks, oh, I'll just copy what he's doing. Well, it doesn't work like that. You've got to start, stop ads. I mean, I have full-time employees, like 4 full-time employees doing nothing but uploading new ads and starting them in different countries, stopping them, you know, testing other ones. Doing. I mean, there's a lot of work. You can't just copy and paste somebody else's work. Because I believe me, I had people try.
But
I used to challenge everybody. I would be very open. Like people would tell me I'm crazy because I would open my Facebook account and I would say, look, here's exactly this ad. Here's exactly like people would lose their mind when they see I paid a nickel for clicks on Facebook and they're paying $1.50. They're like, how the hell did you do that? And I'm like, well, first of all, you got to find a girl with a big rack. Right, who is looks like a soccer mom and is like looking over the side, got white teeth. I mean, I could tell you exactly. And it's funny, people stole that exact one that I had, and I was fine with it because I had already moved on to other ones. But I'm like, here's exactly what I did. I'll show you everything. I'll show you how much, what territories, everything. And I've always been open to share things.
But I wanted to check on you a few months back to say, is Jeremy really legitimate or is this all stories? Because you say in the book, if it's true, if you believe it. So I think, well, maybe it's not true. Maybe he's just putting one over on me. And I think I'm with him on how he's cheating the rest of the world, but he's cheating me. No, I talked to a well-respected entrepreneur. I asked him. He told me a little bit about your business, but he also mentioned something that I wish I'd followed up on, which is basically that Facebook gave you their ads for a while, that you were reselling ads for others.
No.
No. Were you placing ads for others?
Well, he was saying what? That I was reselling?
Reselling Facebook ads. I wish I could tell you who this is.
No, it's fine. I mean, I'm not sure what that means.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure I probably was. I'm just not sure what reselling Facebook ads. Like, I was buying other people's ads and reselling them, or?
Selling ads on behalf of Facebook. No. Okay.
No. I mean, I was on, like, their board where I would fly into Palo Alto, and we would talk about, you know, like, how they can help me spend more money. Now they're freaking assholes, right? Now that they're public and, you know, now they got their exchange and their external network and everything. 3 of my accounts that were spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a day got banned that haven't been used for years, all because they had the same credit card on every account, which Facebook set up for me, right? Okay, anyway, that's my little rant on those son of a bucks. But so then a Facebook employee tells me, oh, just create another account. I'm like, why don't you just unban the ones I have 5 years history advertising on? Well, just make a new one. Okay. So anyway. But
and did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I have several accounts, you know, so we still will do pay-per-click, but now we manage other people's money. And I don't know if that's what they were talking about or not. But
all right, I'll follow up. You're going to be back for another interview. And this time when I talk to people about you, I'm going to dig in. I'm in San Francisco. One of the benefits is we have drinks with people where they just open up about it. You would be amazed by how much people will open up about their companies, what their bosses are making.
Why do you think I take a lot of our clients, CEOs and stuff, to strip clubs and stuff? You want to see somebody open up, take them to a strip club.
Even better.
Get them here.
What is this? Travis, one of my past interviewees, sent me this. Glenn Levitt, 21.
Very nice.
It's really good stuff. I intend to use it here in the office, bring people in for private conversations.
Very nice. I do want to answer your question, though.
Oh, go ahead, please.
You brought up, like, you tell about, like, you know, Mark, you know, basically, like, you know, I want people to make up their own mind. Here's my experience and here's my story, right? And even at the beginning of the book, it's the first, you know, part I quote, you know, Charles Dickens, and I say, I'm not going to tell the story how it happened. I'm going to tell you how I remember it. You know, and that's the biggest thing is that, you know, feel free to talk to Facebook or any of these companies and verify everything. Talk to MediaWiz, the company that bought auction ads, you know, talk to whoever. But the thing is like, I want you to take away is like, there's still excellent value. If everything was made up, right? There's so many people, I go to every conference and there's so many people that come up to me and are like, dude, you wrote this one thing. And because of that, like now, and they'll bring their kids. And I brought in Timmy and he's not allowed to come in to the conference, but will you mind going outside to take a picture with my kids? I mean, like, I can ask Cheeseburger, which you know Neil and you know Ben and you know those guys, right?
Yep.
But the actual founders, a kid from Hawaii, came up to me at PubCon, the founders, and said they started that site inspired by my AdSense track.
Oh, really?
That's exactly true.
Wow.
Vaynerchuk used to reach out to me as this little hustler on Digital Point all the time. How do I do this? I mean, it's like, so let's just take away everything. Let's take away, say I'm just lying about everything I've ever done. Then, you know, and Google's lying, you know, and they put me on stage and all this other stuff. And boil down to, like, you still got to work, right? It doesn't matter in your life if everything I've said is a lie or not, but you still have gotten a lot of value out of things that I've said, like, over the years or not.
Just to be clear, I checked it out and it came in and I got some really positive feedback. We wouldn't be doing this interview otherwise. So I wasn't saying that you weren't.
That's why I said I'm leveraging your credibility.
What are you doing with the book that other people are going to copy? What's the marketing tactic that everyone else is going to steal?
So I got...
Okay. Oh, sorry, one more thing about that. I do check out some people who don't check out. And there are people out there and who are absolute scammers, who are so good at promoting themselves. People who get funded, who investors then have an incentive to promote them the way that they promote themselves, who claim that they are founders of other companies and they know they weren't. I verified it. I've wanted to write these posts, but it's just not me, so I don't do it. But we have to keep checking.
Oh, that's me.
I sometimes get it wrong, but I have to keep checking, yeah. So I get it right more than I get it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a good – I mean, that makes you. You know,
so many people who you think are legitimate who are faking – they say on their bios, I founded this company, and they have the company name, and they're introduced by investors at investor events. They're introduced by conference organizers who have an incentive to promote the speaker because if they have a great speaker, then they have a great event that people are excited to go see and tell their friends that they saw this great speaker, and they're bullshit. Okay, so let's go back to the promotion. What are you doing to promote?
Okay, so mark my words, I came up with this. If anyone's ever heard of this for a book before, let me know. I told every company, I put it out there in my list, and I did it in between Christmas and New Year's. Stupid time to do it, but the book's about to come out, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, I want to, like, do something marketing-wise that's going to generate a lot of buzz. So I put out this thing, and I said, you know what? If your company sends me $2,500, at first I was going to sell the book, but then all the royalties went to Amazon, and I was like, so then I was like, you send me $2,500, and I'll put your company and a link to your company's website in the book, okay? I had 20 companies do it.
So 20 companies gave you $2,500 to have their logo and their URL in the back. And how much of that did you get to keep?
It's all going to charity.
It's all going to charity.
All going to charity. So it's split up between two local Lincoln charities and the Avon Foundation, which is the Affiliate Marketers Give Back main charity.
I see. So. And is there any promotion on their part too that they want to promote the book because they're in there?
Well, of course.
All right.
It's a win. It's such a win-win because, you know, they buy all a bunch of copies for everyone in their thing. Right?
Oh,
It's like, think of it as like this, almost like a self-fulfilling thing, right? Companies are in there, but then they also want companies to know they're in there, right? So they'll buy a bunch and give them to friends and be like, look, here I am in the back, right? So I had a company who's in the back, Marketing Ninjas, buy 300 copies. You know, I've had Max Bounty who's doing by the way, this is brilliant too, I shouldn't say my ideas are brilliant. It sounds so cocky, but
hit it.
Basically like, I said to a company, I said, you know, hey, I'm just going to offer this. You buy, you know, hundreds of copies of my books to give away at Affiliate Summit next week. I'll sit at your booth and sign them. The greatest publicity, their booth will be the biggest. I mean, we're giving them away for donations, right? So because it's for like Affiliate Summit's favorite charity, they're going to want to help, right? So because it's like this booth for this affiliate company, they're going to email out to all their affiliates, right? Come to our booth and get Shoemaker's thing. So, I mean, it's just like there's all these little angles and low-hanging fruit that people don't think about. And it's just like it works every which way for everybody. So, including myself.
And the book is full of these stories. I have them here in the list of things that I want to talk about, but I didn't get to. So if you guys are getting the book, and I don't mean to promote it, but I'm going to promote it because I like good stuff. I mean, I like good books. Jeremy, one of my other problems here is many authors are have nothing to say. They will puff it out, and I'll sometimes get sucked into their stories because I agree to do the interview before I see the book. And then I freak out because I see the book. There's not enough in there. There's no real substance to it, and I have to find a way to say no, which hurts me. So when a book is good, I like to tell the audience that it's good. And the stories that I didn't get to that I hope people read are the ones about free SEO report and the one about where's the other one? The one about standing up on stage and getting and making a sale with an audience member. What you did with Craigslist to get a sale within a few minutes. All right, one final thing. Jeremy, you're a great salesman. You know Mixergy Premium has hundreds of interviews with proven entrepreneurs. What's one thing I could do to do a good sales pitch right now for it, right at this point of this interview?
Well, I think people are drastically missing out from, I mean, they're drastically missing out from not, from hearing from people who have real experience. You do, you investigate these people, you know these people. These people aren't coming on to give a sales pitch or talk about a theory. You're like the no spin zone of, you know, whatever. So if people want to learn from people who have real experience and are sharing real stuff, there's no better place than from you.
All right. And I'm going to work on the three P's too in one of my future promotions for it.
Yeah. Well, you got to fill in the pain a little bit. You know, what if there was this guy and all he had was people with experience? Well, that's here. It's right here.
All right. I'm going to attempt that. I'm going to use this.
Just listen to Jeremy Shoemaker. So there you go. There's your proof.
Yes. Can I use you as a social proof in the future?
Whatever you want to do.
I will use you for so many things.
Poor man.
All right, my man. Thank you so much for doing this interview. The website is shoemoney.com, where you can find the book and you can see the articles we've been talking about, and you can see this interesting post about why a mutual friend of ours apparently is a loser, Francisco Dow. I wanted to bring that up, but I didn't get a chance to, so I'll leave that for people to go see. You really mean that?
What about him being a loser?
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you read the post, he's total, you know, like the whole point I make about it.
All right. I'm going to leave that for people to check out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this interview, and thank you all for being a part of it.